and will bring them down into the valley of Yah shall judge. And I will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. The gathering of all nations against Israel in the context of partition of the land between Jew and Arab. Verse 9. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare war. Notice the margin. Sanctify war. Holy war. Well, we heard that phrase, brothers and sisters. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. 50 years ago, brothers and sisters, that was impossible. How could a weak nation like Iraq say that it was strong? But by acquiring the weapons of mass destruction, ABC, atomic, biological, chemical, they are now a power to even the great nations of the West fear. The weak say, I am strong. Verse 16. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people, and that's the saints, and the strength of the children of Israel. See the division there between the saints and Israel. So shall ye know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her anymore. God's deliverance of Israel, beginning at Jerusalem. And the fact, brethren and sisters, that every word of Joel up to the end of chapter 3, verse 1, and a bit of chapter 3 as well, has been fulfilled to the letter, gives us the assurance of hope that the rest will be. Jeremiah chapter 30, another amazing prophecy. Jeremiah chapter 30, the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Verse 3, For lo, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, saith the Lord, and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. And these are the words that the Lord spake concerning Israel and concerning Judah. For thus saith the Lord, We have heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask ye now, and see whether a man doth travail with child. Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins, as a woman in travail, and all faces are turned into paleness. They have never known peace, brothers and sisters, since the day in May 1948, when they declared their statehood. Those are but some of the conflicts that have occurred in the land. What's going to happen? Verse 8. It shall come to pass in that day, saith the Lord of hosts, that I will break his yoke from off thy neck and will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him, but they shall serve the Lord their God and the beloved their king, whom I will raise up. And that's the Old Testament word for resurrection. Whom I will raise up unto them. Peace at last for Israel. Now we're looking, brethren and sisters, at the evidence of things not seen. And those are the things that we've covered thus far. Let's move on there to the next one. Zechariah chapter 12. Jerusalem, a burdensome stone for all nations. Jerusalem is the insoluble problem on the Middle East agenda. So there are many cities and territories which are disputed in the world in the sense of who should rule over them or own them. East Timor, Kashmir, Kosovo, Northern Ireland, Sri Lanka, all are striven over by two or three parties. But Jerusalem is absolutely unique. It's taken by the Israelis in 1967, and in 1980 they declared it to be their eternal capital. It's wanted by Yasser Arafat and his Palestinians to be the capital of their planned state. It's desired by the Pope to be an international holy city, ruled over by him from the Vatican. It's not considered by the European Union to be a part of the state of Israel. They sent a letter to the Israeli government in March 1999, and they said that they considered Jerusalem to be a corpus separatum. And I put that to our youth group in Coventry, and I said, who wrote that? And an 11-year-old put his hand up and said, the Pope. It's Latin, isn't it? It's obvious. He's a bright lad. The European Union, by the way, is the largest donor of money to the Palestinian Authority. The United Nations has expressed a desire to make it a territory administered by them from New York. There's a man in Russia called Vladimir Zhirinovsky, who's now incidentally the deputy speaker of the Russian Duma, and whom I read on the internet recently, is saying that the leader of the Russian people should not be called the president. That's a Western title. He should be called the Tsar. It's interesting. Vladimir Zhirinovsky's already written his autobiography, and he wants to lead the Red Army down into the Middle East and take over Israel and all the Muslim countries. He wants to rule Jerusalem. And I'm sure that Saddam Hussein and the mullahs in Iran and the other Arab powers would like to control it as well. So there's seven. There's seven powers who've all got interest in Jerusalem. Now what does the Bible say? Zechariah 12 and verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord for Israel, saith the Lord, which stretcheth forth the heavens. Now, a brother said to me very recently that what the Hebrew means there is a continuous tense. The Lord which is stretching forth the heavens. We've got an expanding universe, brothers and sisters, which man cannot measure. And it's the God who is doing that, and who laid the foundation of the earth, and who formed the spirit of man within him, who says, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about, when they shall be in the siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. And in that day I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, although all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. This city is as desirable as a cup of fine wine. The nations who seek it will behave like drunkards. It's like a huge boulder blocking the way to peace, and the nations like little ants are trying to push it and roll it out of the way, and it trundles back and crushes them. It's the focus of world attention. What a remarkable prophecy, brothers and sisters. It's being fulfilled before our very eyes. And we know what's going to happen next. Chapter 4, verse 9, God is going to intervene to solve the problem of Jerusalem. Verses 10 and 11, the second coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, who's going to be recognized at last by the Jews as their Messiah. What about the political position of the surrounding nations? Ezekiel chapter 38 is so well known to us. Another of my recollections from my teenage years, along with hymn 225. Endless lectures on Ezekiel 38. Well, what's the mood in Russia? I've already mentioned Zhirinovsky, who wants the Red Army to invade the Middle East. Many of you will know, I'm sure, Brother John Ramsden. He went to Moscow and he booked himself on the tourist trip around the Kremlin, and he's looking over the Kremlin walls at St. Basil's Cathedral. And on top of each of the onion domes there's an Eastern Orthodox cross, and underneath there's an inverted crescent moon. So he said to his tourist guide, he said, what's that there for? Ah, says the guide, that's the Muslim symbol. That's there to remind us that in 1453, the Muslims drove us out of our capital, and that we've got to go back down there and take our capital city back from the Turks. That's not some top Russian politician, that's just the tourist guide for the day on the Kremlin tour. I looked at a Russian internet site probably a month or two ago now, and in the top three stories, the top story was the Russian foreign minister pictured in Libya with Colonel Gaddafi, inviting Gaddafi to visit Moscow. The third story was Russian arms exports to Iran. There they are, Ezekiel 38, verse 5, Persia and Libya. It's all going, brothers and sisters, in the direction the prophecy said it will go. Brother Don Pierce has given me the details of an internet site, which I haven't had time to explore, which is the joint Russian-EU internet site, which they are working together on their master plan, the EU and Russia. And Brother Don says they're going in exactly the right direction that prophecy requires them to go. So there we go. And now the last one, Revelation 16, wonderful chapter, brothers and sisters, the chapter for us in these latter days. We've already had a look at chapter 15 in the Song of Moses in our third class. The first five vials have been fulfilled, and Brother Des drew attention on Tuesday night to a little bit of it in the campaigns of Napoleon. The sixth vial is being poured out now. Let us not think that the completion of the drying up of the Euphrates has occurred. It's exactly what President Milosevic in Kosovo was doing. He was trying to dry up his bit of the Euphrates. Now, recently there's a top Serbian army leader been convicted in The Hague of war crimes, atrocities against the Muslims in Srebrenica. And when the Serbs in that court referred to the people that they had been slaughtering, they always called them Turks. The Turks! Because that's how they see. Those invaders, as Brother Des said on Tuesday, got up to the gates of Vienna, trying to push them back. That's what went on in Kosovo. That's what the Macedonians are trying to do now with their ethnic Albanians. They're Turks to them. They're trying to push them out of Europe, back to the Euphrates. Verse 13. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. Now this one really has woken up, brothers and sisters, in the last few years. The dragon is the Eastern Orthodox power. The beast is political Western Europe, and the false prophet is the papacy. Now just 2 years ago, the aircraft of some of the beast nations were bombing dragon territory as the NATO aircraft pounded Serbia. But the Pope has been working for years to try and get these three together. He's been working to develop the European Union into a renewed Holy Roman Empire. On the 4th of May this year, the Pope went to Athens. And I don't know how much you folks over here see of what goes on over in our corner of the world. But the reports were the Athenians and particularly the Greek Orthodox were up in arms against this Catholic coming to their Orthodox country. They were going to ring their church bells all day long. They were going to let black balloons up into the air. And the patriarchs of the Greek Orthodox were not going to meet him. What happened? The Pope, and he's a master diplomatist, he went to Athens and he bowed and scraped. He said, I'm sorry for all these atrocities that we committed against you people. We've sinned against you. Please forgive us. And the next thing, arm in arm. Him and Christodoulos, the chief of the Greek Orthodox Church. And he's achieved a reconciliation with the Greek Orthodox Church after 1,000 years. Then in June this year, he went to the Ukraine. And he gets a reconciliation with the Ukrainian Catholics. And his press spokesman said, while he's in the Ukraine, he said he will visit Moscow. After 70 years of repression under communist rule, the Orthodox power is back there in control in Moscow. I looked at a picture on an internet site again a few weeks ago, and there's a great big round table, and a group of men sitting around this table. Recognizable in the midst of it is President Putin, sitting at the head of the table. Every other man around that table had a long black beard and a great tall black hat. There was Patriarch Alexei, the head of the Russian Orthodox, and Christodoulos, the head of the Greek Orthodox, and all their henchmen sitting round the table with Putin. And they're advising him. They say he won't make a major decision without, Alexei, is this all right? They're back in power. Remember Boris Yeltsin, that Russian with the heart problem and the chronic alcoholism who couldn't stand up, couldn't rule his country? They've got to get him out of the way. Get somebody in who's dynamic and got some ability. What did Yeltsin do when he retired? He went straight off down to Jerusalem. And on the 19th of January 2000, he celebrated the Eastern Orthodox Christmas, pardon the word, with all 14 patriarchs of the Orthodox community. The first time they'd all been together for 1,000 years. And there he is, the Tsar of all the Russians, in Jerusalem, with all the patriarchs of the dragon power. The Russian Orthodox apostasy is the second largest landowner in Israel after the Israeli government. So all three, the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, have come into prominence in the last few years. And now suddenly, they're all beginning to align on the same side. What's the context? Verse 15. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. And I believe that the prototype of that is Joshua, who when Moses is up in the mountain, he's halfway up the mount, waiting, watching, keeping his garments. Down there on the plain, Israel are naked and dancing round the golden calf. That's the state of the ecclesia when Moses and Joshua came up. And Joshua is the faithful remnant of the ecclesia who keeps his garments. There's our standard, brothers and sisters. There's our role model. So, you can draw a line between verses, end of verse 14 and beginning of verse 15. That's the second coming of the Lord Jesus in the prophecy. And then verse 16, he gathered them together in a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air and came a great voice out of heaven saying, it is done. We've looked, brothers and sisters, at Jeremiah chapter 30, and we've seen we've got down to verse 8. The time of Jacob's trouble is about to burst upon him. We've looked at Ezekiel 38. We've seen that the scene is set in Moscow and in the Middle East for the invasion that our community has spoken about and looked for so long. We've looked at Daniel 11, verse 40, and we've seen that the next event to take place in that prophecy is the Russian invasion of the Middle East. We've looked at the prophecy of Joel. We've seen that everything's been fulfilled up to chapter 3, verse 1. Chapter 3, verses 9 and 10 are well underway. The next thing to happen is the gathering of the nations into the valley of Yah shall judge. We've seen that Zechariah 12, verses 2 and 3 is bubbling up to its climax. The next thing is divine intervention to save Israel. We've looked at Revelation 16, verses 13 and 14. And we've seen that all the pieces of the jigsaw are dropping into place. How much more evidence do we want, brothers and sisters, that the things which are not seen as yet are about to happen? Our hope is about to be realized. I want to finish with two passages. First Epistle of John and chapter 3. First Epistle of John, chapter 3, and verse 1. Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. And it is not yet manifest, phanerou in the Greek, it is not yet manifest what we shall be. But we know that when he shall be manifest, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. That's our responsibility, brothers and sisters, our individual responsibility. God is doing his part, as we've seen in the great span of the outworking of prophetic events. Are we? And the last one. And I'm not going to comment on this one, I'm just going to read it. First letter of Peter, chapter 1, and verse 13. First Peter 1, verse 13. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation, apocalypsis, of Jesus Christ.